RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have found a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This week, the episode we are covering is... Josh?
We are going to be talking about episode 17 from season 1, called The Huntress Returns.
Ooh, another mysterious title. I wonder what this one's about.
Well, you have to kind of dig deep into the story to figure it out, but
okay.
I'll give you a brief rundown. Maybe this will help.
Okay, good.
When Helena Bertinelli, the Huntress, returns to Starling City, then her father's lawyer pays a heavy price. So she is looking for her father. So she manipulates Oliver to help her hunt him down, but she's captured by the police, and then Oliver has to make a decision about breaking her out. Because, you know, she knows his secret. And then also Tommy, he's dealing with his new knowledge about Oliver's secret. And Thea is dealing with her interest in Roy Harper. And Lance is dealing with his wife's belief that Sarah may be alive. And Felicity deals with the dangers of helping Team Arrow. So there's a lot of people dealing with things in this episode. And then in a flashback on the island, Oliver is negotiating with Fires to try to find a way off the island.
Oh, that should work out without any issues whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just go and, you know, give each other some stuff and shake hands, and I'm sure that's going to work.
Call it quits, right. All right. Well, before we get into the discussion topics for this episode, we've just got a little bit of news that we found out back on March 5th. We got information about the DVD and Blu-ray release. Not too much information on what's going to be on the discs, other than, I'm assuming, the entire first season here. But it will be out on September 3rd, 2013, and you can go to Amazon to do a pre-order of either the DVD or Blu-ray on that.
Looking forward to that. I hope there's some behind-the-scenes stuff or some bonus features that they'll give us.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I would love to see some pieces on either set design or some of the fight choreography stuff. I know there's been some stuff online with showing them doing some of the blocking moves for some of the fights that they've done, you know, kind of in rehearsal with just, you know, guys in T-shirts and hats and stuff like that on a soundstage before they actually go onto the set. So that would be pretty cool to see.
Yeah, for sure.
And then on March 20th, the day that this episode aired, we found out that Manu Bennett and Colton Haynes have joined Emily Bett Records as season 2 regulars. So more Slade Wilson, more Roy Harper, along with Felicity Smoke in season 2. So,
yeah, I don't think that was too much of a surprise. I mean, because of the characters that they play and how big they were in the comics. So just the way they've been using the characters, the main characters, I'm not too surprised about that. But I'm glad to see it because I like both. Well, I like all three of them. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it takes a lot of the surprise out of it, though. You know, it's like when one of these characters gets... Well, I guess that's not necessarily true. If one of them could be put in jeopardy, you know, you're like, oh, well, they'll be safe because we know they're coming back for season 2. But there's always stuff they could do. Like Lost did that all the time. It's like, oh, well, they can't kill these people off. And they'd kill them off, but they were still regulars because they were always showing up in flashbacks or flash sidewayses or...
Yeah, well, and this... this, the storyline of, you know, the Green Arrow storyline is, I think, obscure enough. It's not so mainstream that that they wouldn't necessarily, you know, kill off one of these characters, even though they haven't been killed off in the comic books. Mm-hmm. So even somebody like Speedy, because they have other options already. Yeah. They already have other options. So
yeah, definitely. So, well, that's cool. And we don't know, you know, we've not yet seen Slade Wilson off the island or anything like that, but obviously he'd be showing up in flashbacks, if not at some point, hopefully in Starling City, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah, we haven't even seen him in his mask yet.
That's true. So. He picked it up in one of the episodes, but he never actually put it on. So
yeah,
well, that's something that they're going to have to work towards there. And so we'll be talking more about Deathstroke as he shows up in the, well, or I guess Slade Wilson. And if he puts on the mask, then we can call him Deathstroke. How about that?
Yeah. Or in the yearbook, you know, it just said Slade, Deathstroke, Wilson. You
know? like Chainsaw in summer school, right?
Yeah, but he was voted most likely to stab you through the eye with a sword.
Oh, that's terrible. So, all right. Well, in the Huntress Returns episode here, I don't think we usually do first appearances, but there isn't really any notable first appearances for this episode. We've got some, you know, generic bad guy people. We've got this attorney for Frank Bertinelli that gets offed at the strip club here at the beginning, but I mean, he's really nobody. I looked up his name. I've got his name here somewhere. It's
Gus Sabatoni.
Gus Sabatoni, yeah.
Sabatoni. I love the mob names that they are giving these guys.
He's like, oh, hey, Helena, nice to see you. But yeah, I looked him up, and there's no, I couldn't find a reference to him, you know, as some kind of comic book character or anything like that. So, No first appearances in this particular episode. So let's look at some of the other stuff that's going on here. In one of the previous Green Justice podcasts, we talked about, or I think you were talking about how easy it would be to live in Starling City due to the fact that you can pretty much say anything and people believe you, that people are relatively gullible at the lies that are being told. And we've kind of joked about this back and forth, but there's a little bit of reveal about that, I guess, in this episode.
Yeah, I think they're starting to learn or something. It took some night classes on seeing through people's lies, maybe. I don't know. So,
yeah, so Tommy is, something weird is going on. Tommy is being cagey around Laurel, and he's not telling her something, and she can see. She sees right through him, and she even just says, I can see through your lie, but he won't tell her what it is. So this is obviously the whole thing that was revealed just a couple episodes before with Oliver revealing himself to Tommy as the vigilante. And now Tommy's got to deal with that. This episode is him kind of processing that, you know, going through some of the stages of grief and anger and frustration and everything like that. And I think in the end he seems to be cool with it, but I think there's a lot more to it than what we see in the episode.
Yeah, and at the end, you know, I think he's kind of seen what Oliver has to go through in order to maintain this secret, and maybe realizes some of the reasons why he has to maintain it, and I think he understands a little bit more, you know.
Now, do you think that's mainly due to the fact that Helena basically manhandles him down in the Arrow Cave? She's, you know, he's wearing the brace on his hand there throughout the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she just they didn't show her taking him down. I mean, he Oliver walked in and he was already, you know, face down on the table with his left arm up behind him, and
right.
She's, you know, breaking his wrist or something there. So yeah, I think that was it right there. I think as soon as she did that, he's like, oh, okay. I gotcha.
So, Tommy, you were saying that Tommy, you know, realizes like what Oliver's got to go through, but I mean, I don't know. The interaction seemed relatively quick. I mean, you know, it's just this one little piece here with you know, Tommy getting beat up by the Huntress, and Oliver, you know, rescuing him. Do you think that is what fully, you know, made him understand how dangerous Oliver's line of work is and why he's been trying to protect his friends this way?
I think that was the beginning of it. I mean, just I think throughout the whole incident with her, and after, you know, I mean, I'm sure he found out what happened, you know, at least most of it. I mean, some of it was probably on the news. I mean, they killed. She killed, I don't know what, like a dozen cops at the end there. So I'm sure that was all over the news. And you know, that was just kind of the beginning of it. But I mean, I'm sure he was kind of figuring out right there. I'm like, okay, this is bad news. Like knowing about this stuff can be really dangerous for people. So I mean, I think it planted the seed of him starting to realize it. But you know, when you're going through a situation that's so traumatic and quick and stressful, you know, you're not fully processing everything, but after you calm down and it sinks in, you start to realize what's going on. I think that's kind of what was happening.
Can you refresh me on this? I think that in the timeline, before that happened, they had a discussion, Tommy and Oliver had a discussion at the club, and Oliver said, you know, I think he asked him, you know, do you know why I wear this mask? And, you know, he said, it's to protect your identity. And Oliver was like, no, it's to protect those closest to me, which is a common theme in a lot of different superhero stories, you know, that they're wearing the mask, so, you know, to hide their identity for whatever reason. But there's also the whole, you know, you don't want to come after my family. I think that's what we've talked about Identity Crisis, the miniseries, which is basically that's what the whole that series was about, of someone attacking the people closest to these heroes because they found out who they were, you know, who the hero was and who was closest to them. That did come before Tommy's attack, right? Is that?
It did. Right. And also, you know, Tommy kind of explained himself a little bit to Oliver, because Oliver was thinking, as I was actually, you know, when it first happened, that he was just mad at him because he was lying to him, you know, right. But Tommy's like, you know, no, I mean, I'm upset because look, you have killed people. I don't know who you are. You know, I mean, I've been friends with you my whole life, and now I find out that you're this killer. And that's why he was so upset with him. And he said, you know, it wasn't about the lies. So it was just, you know, again, this is like on the other end. It was the realization of everything that has happened since Oliver's been back and him becoming the vigilante, that was sinking in first with Tommy. And now he realizes more what was going on. So,
it does keep coming back to this. And I know we talk about this a lot, the killing aspect and Oliver kind of skirting that line between, you know, vengeance and, you know, just scaring somebody or, you know, disabling them. And it's, He strays to either side of that line. I also wonder, it's, you know, with the way the news has been portraying the vigilante, you know, I just imagine if there was someone like this going around, you know, attacking people, the news, I would think, in the real world here, would play up the fact, oh, you know, there's some psycho going around. He's shooting people, you know, he's killing people, and they would just kind of amp it up. And then, of course, you've got the Dark Archer coming in that the public may or may not know that there's a copycat. So, you know, things still may be being attributed to the vigilante, to Arrow. So Tommy's probably got all that in his head.
Right. Well, and I mean, if you think about it in real life, I mean, if you've ever been in a situation where you found out a friend was, betraying you, or maybe not even that severe, just, you know, doing something that you didn't realize they were capable of. You know, and the emotions that you kind of go through when somebody so close to you is doing something you didn't know about. I mean, I remember when I first found out about your secret identity, and it was very traumatic for me. And well, we're not recording, are we?
I apologized for that like 5 years ago.
I know, but you know, it's just shocking. You know, you take some time. But,
I am Jovial Jay.
but I mean, you know, so those emotions kind of stir up, and it takes you a while to get over. But you know, you want to find, you know, the person that's guilty of it, they want to find closure really fast. Mm-hmm. You know, and the person who was the, you know, whatever, the victim,
the wrong,
you could call them, but
the wronged, yeah.
Yeah, they need some time. You know, they need some time to let it all sink in. So, I mean, if you think about it in the real world relationship kind of way, you know, that's the way it kind of goes. So,
yeah,
he probably would be that shocked. You know, so well,
but it was all better in 42 minutes. So now,
I know if my life was like that.
So now in this episode, we see the return of Helena Bertinelli, the Huntress, who we last saw in Vendetta, which was the second part of a two-parter, a loose two-parter, but it was Muse of Fire and Vendetta. You were not a big fan of those episodes compared to me. I think I enjoyed those a little bit more. How do you feel about her return in this episode?
I I liked it a lot better.
Okay.
And you know, if I'm remembering right, I don't want to contradict myself. Although it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, my feelings change as I experience more, and it, same thing goes with the show. You know, the more I see, the more I like things, or I can go back and watch an episode and like it better the second time. But
sure.
The thing that I really did not like in that episode was the interaction between Helena and Oliver. And it was, you know, I felt it was a little fast. It was a little forced, mm-hmm. You know, and that didn't really happen in this episode. There wasn't really a chance for anything like that. There was very little personal interaction. I'd say the one time that did happen was when she shows up in his house. Mm-hmm. He actually was down there telling, you know, Diggle and Felicity to find her, you know, look everywhere, do this. And he goes upstairs and she's sitting there on his couch.
Yeah.
You know, talking to his sister. And the one that was like the one kind of, I don't want to say intimate because they weren't having, you know, friendly relationships at
right.
that point or anything, but the personal relationships where they were just talking, and she was a little bit more intimidating, I thought, you know, than she was in the first two that she was in.
It's just that it's that extra level of tension, you know, for a thriller kind of style that they were going for in this. So, But Helena does what Oliver fears the most, I think, in this episode, and that she's captured by the police, and she reveals, you know, who he is.
I loved this scene. This was, again, I don't know if you remember a couple episodes ago, I think I was saying it seemed like everything that I was expecting them not to do in the episode, they did.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing happened in this scene where she's sitting in the police station. You know, I'm like, oh, she's not going to reveal to, I mean, because then the police will know. I mean, there's no way she's going to say they're going to get around this somehow. Like, he's going to come rescue her. And then, oh, no, she didn't. No.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, now I think the reason that the police didn't believe her, so it was Quentin Lance and McKenna Hall. Lance has already one time suspected Oliver as being the Hood and was disproved. So there's kind of this off again, on again relationship, as we've talked about, where he trusts him, he doesn't trust him, he trusts him, he doesn't trust him. And then McKenna is at this point dating Oliver. She's about 2-3 episodes now. They've been kind of seeing each other off and on.
Yeah.
I think. And so when Helena comes out and says, oh, yeah, it's Oliver, Oliver Queen. And if she had stopped right there and just like was, you know, shut up, I think they might have believed her. But she kept digging. She knew that McKenna was seeing Oliver. So she kept digging at McKenna, saying, you know, oh, yeah, isn't he the one you're seeing? You know, oh, yeah. And he's dating all these other people, too. You know, and she just kept digging on, and at that point, I think both McKenna and Lance both kind of just shut down and was like, telling her just to shut up, because you know they weren't believing that at that point. They figured she was just trying to get under their skin.
Yeah, she started seeming real untrustworthy. Like, we can't believe anything this chick says. I mean, come on. Like, I mean, listen to her. She sounds so arrogant. She's sitting in the police station. So why would we believe what she's saying?
Right.
You know.
So, you know, that's very fortunate, obviously, for Oliver to have that, to have it come out in that way. I'm kind of wondering if they, you know, because you, I don't want it to be one of these shows where it's like in The Hulk. I don't know if you're, did you ever watch The Incredible Hulk growing up with Bill Bixby?
In the 70s?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah, absolutely.
So you know how the reporter was always chasing after the Hulk, and he always just missed him, and he never found out that Bruce Banner or David Banner was the Hulk. And it was just like, really? I mean, you know, it's like these just lame coincidences time after time after time.
So you don't want him to, like, Mr. McGee, Detective Lance, where he, you know, walks around the corner right after – you know, Oliver changes into the hood or something like that.
Right. Or, you know, three or four more episodes go by or next season somebody else goes, oh, yeah, Oliver Queen is the vigilante. And he's like, come on, I've heard that one like six times. You know, that's not going to happen. And then Oliver comes up and goes, no, I really am the hood. And he's like, cut it out, you nut.
I wouldn't. No, I don't want him to do that either because that would start to get a little hokey. But yeah. I wouldn't mind. It would be kind of funny to see Oliver trying to convince Detective Lance.
Well, maybe next the Halloween episode next year, it'll be there. You know, he's going to have a Halloween party and maybe Oliver will dress up as Robin Hood or something like that.
Oh, that would be pretty cool. Actually.
See, I think they could have fun with it like that. But I just don't want to, you know, have it be in a serious way where as part of the plot, you know, they're somebody keeps trying to out Oliver and people just don't believe him. Because after a while, it's like, well, you're like the fifth person to tell me. Maybe there is some truth to this, you know?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, and they're portraying, you know, pretty well, I think, Detective Lance as being a smart guy. So, I mean, I guess he seems like he should be a smart guy, although
he is a smart guy,
missing
but,
a lot.
Well, his passion, I think, blinds him in a number of ways. We noticed this last week when Laura was kidnapped. So, you know, because he kind of went in, he was not thinking straight.
Right, right. He gets very emotional and you know, even tried to shoot
Shirish Vanch.
I agree with you. So that's why he still seems smart to me. You know, he still seems like a smart guy. But the emotions are changing the way he's thinking. So I agree with you. I don't want to continue to kind of elude him like that. I don't necessarily need him to find out, but I don't want these situations where he should know, but he doesn't.
Right. Right.
So,
that would be definitely a failing of the writers when you've set up a very smart character and they routinely miss these clues that are put into the show that are for the audience to notice. But when this supposedly smart character, because you keep telling the audience how smart this person is, if they're missing it, then that all of a sudden, it undermines the writing because all of a sudden it's, you know, well, he's not really a smart character because, like, I'm able to figure this out and I'm just sitting at home watching TV.
So. Well, maybe if he starts to get a little too smart, you know, maybe Oliver can do like a Three Amigos thing where he just has everybody dress up as Green Arrow. And, you know, then he can't tell who it is. So
I thought you meant he was going to do something where he's going to stand on the wall and go, over here, over here. Look up here, look up here, look up here.
He could do that too.
So, all right, we're going to do a little name association right here. Now, I'm going to say some names to you, and I just want you to see if you can figure out what they might have in common, okay?
This is like the $50,000 pyramid kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right, I'm ready.
So first off, we've got Sarah Lance, okay? Then we've got Helena Bertinelli. Then we've got McKenna Hall.
Girls. These are girls. Let's see. People that Oliver has slept with.
Ding, 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 ding. And who have had their lives ruined in some fashion after that fact.
Oh, yes. Yes. I don't know. Oliver's got some bad luck loins, I guess. I don't... it seems like you may not want to be in a relationship with Oliver or something bad's going to happen to you.
Well, now, in all fairness, I will say that I think Helena's problem started way before she got involved with Oliver. Her involvement with him definitely set her on her current path, which in... you know, very much in an Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker sort of mentorship. He just was not the best trainer. And, you know, she left before she was completely trained and, you know, fell to the dark side, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she took the easy path, you know, she just like, I'm just going to kill them all. So, I agree with you. She was already on a bad path. I mean, she was already doing some stuff that she shouldn't have, but she probably, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that she would have stopped, but she probably would have gotten caught.
Well, he was trying to stop her. I mean, you know, because he, in the previous episodes that she was in, I mean, he was trying to show her, you know, we had talked about this earlier, the difference between justice and revenge or vengeance and, you know, trying to, teach her something. And, well, unfortunately, when she comes back to this episode, she did learn one of his rules and unfortunately used it against him. So, but I like the way that they got rid of McKenna on the show. So, I guess I'm kind of being sarcastic about that because, again, it kind of wrapped up a little too neatly. So, she's been promoted to the head of, or not the head of, but as part of the Vigilante Task Force on a previous episode, either the previous one or the one right before that. And in this episode, she comes really close to apprehending the Hood. She's been told who the Hood is, but she obviously doesn't believe, you know, that Helena when she tells her that. And then she gets shot and... Oliver, you know, she's not dead or anything like that. Oliver goes to visit her and she's like, you know what? I can't go back to work here. I'm going to move out of town. It's going to take me a year to, you know, go through all of her physical therapy and stuff because she had a shattered pelvis and all these things. And, you know, it's like, wow, that's all just very, very, very convenient. It just didn't really sit well with me. I don't know if you had any similar thoughts about that.
I wondered why, like why they felt like they needed to get rid of her. I don't know if they did just the actress wasn't clicking with people. I'm just clicking with me. Okay, she looked great, but I kind of liked that sort of weird relationship between, you know, two people that shouldn't be together because of their involvement in the Hood. Mm-hmm. Or with the Hood, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure why they got rid of her so quick. I agree with you. It seemed very convenient, and I liked the character, so I was disappointed. It seems like they could have still used her, even if she had been injured.
And I guess it doesn't mean that, you know, she won't be back in some fashion at some point. You know, and to Oliver's, you know, to his benefit, you know, he did try to make amends with her and, you know, she said she needed to move and he's like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, I'll get a house there too because I'm a billionaire and, you know, I'll come see you and all this stuff. And she's like, you know, stop kidding yourself. You know, it's like, you know, your life's here. Again, it just felt like the writers were like, well, we just need to give him this whole out to get out of this relationship. Like they had kind of dug themselves into a point where, oh boy, you know, what are we going to do with this character now? There's like, I don't know that they just couldn't figure out what to do with her. Or like you said, if there was a, you know, if they needed to release the actress from doing any more shows or anything like that. So I guess we'll have to see.
It might've been something like that. It was getting a little complicated as far as women and relationships in the story go. They have, you know, Felicity, they have Helena. I mean, Felicity's not in a relationship with him, you know, at least right now or anything, but.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm not sure.
Well, and also, every now and again, like when I'm watching the show, between Laurel and McKenna and Laurel's partner at CNRI, Joanne, something like that? Joanna?
I think Joanna. Yeah, that's it.
They're all dark-haired women. They all have similar builds and complexions. And like when they... Like when McKenna got dressed up and they were going out, like I looked back up at the screen at one point, I'm like, wait a second, who is he out with Laurel? You know, it's like, it's very easy to tell Felicity apart from anybody else because she's blonde and just has a different kind of demeanor about her. But, you know, these other women that Oliver's been dating, they all are very similar. So that, you know, from a look on screen standpoint, I don't know if that might have had something to do with it as well, but...
My other thought is maybe the story that they're planning is headed more towards some sort of relationship with Laurel, because ultimately, you know.
That's what I think.
I shouldn't say we know, but we suspect because of the relationships in the comic that that's where it's going to go.
Right. Well, and yeah, I know they needed to get him. they needed to get him solo in order to open that up. But, you know, is that something that they're going to transition to here in the last five or six episodes for the season? Are they going to try to reintroduce that? Because right now, obviously, Laurel and Tommy, even though they're having a little bit of friction in this particular episode, just due to the fact that Tommy's keeping a secret and Laurel is obviously assuming the worst about it. She's not sure what's going on, but they've been doing really well. I mean, they're really clicking. They seem to have a great friendship and relationship going through the past, you know, through the past five episodes or six episodes or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I always, you know, I'm disappointed when the good looking characters are let off the show, but that's almost every week because everybody in the Starling City is good looking. So
exactly. Right.
But I like her. Hopefully we'll see. Maybe she can come back and make some complications between him and Laurel, you know, later on down the line. So,
yeah, and I think she could be a good foil for that. Yeah. Well, as I mentioned a little bit ago, Helena did learn something from Oliver, and she uses it basically to her advantage against Oliver and his team and his family here when she comes back to town. It's basically she learned from him about using leverage against the individual you're going against to get what you want. So you figure out what is important to them, and you use that as leverage to manipulate them into getting you what you want. So, you know, most of the time with Oliver, that's threatening death against, you know, or exposure of some kind, you know, of exposure to the public about wrongdoings and things like that. Not the other kind of exposure. to the public so that these bad guys that he goes up against will change. So where Helena, you know, comes in, basically she, like we said, she shows up at Oliver's house and she makes a thinly veiled threat against his family, like in his house. And, you know, I mean, you know, you've probably seen enough movies where, you know, they do that. And it's like, you will not come into my house and make this kind of, you know, statement. And he goes down, you know, he's screaming at Diggle that, you know, he wants her watched and he needs extra protection. And, you know, Diggle's like, I'm on it. And they go to the club, and what's the next thing that happens is, oh, there's an, you know, Oliver gets a note from Diggle, supposedly. He goes downstairs, and there she is. She's got Tommy, like you said, with his arm bent, you know, kind of way back behind, you know, his back, possibly breaking his wrist or, you know, obviously doing some damage because he was wearing a splint on it throughout the rest of the episode. But, you know, she's basically torturing his friend so that Oliver will agree to do what she needs. And in this case, it's to help her track down her father, who's being put in witness protection. And they only have a few hours or a day or and a half or something like that before he gets a new face, a new name, or I guess not a new face, but a new name and a new identity and everything. And she will never be able to find him again. And I was just thinking about all the different people that are, you know, being used as leverage in this episode. And Helena goes against Tommy. She then goes and beats up Felicity and zip ties her up in Queen Consolidated, like goes into his business and, you know, takes care of her that way. And then at the end uses McKenna basically by shooting her. I don't know that she necessarily shot her on purpose. I think she might have been aiming for Oliver, but I guess you could read it as she was shooting at McKenna because she knew of the relationship between Oliver and McKenna and knew that that would keep Oliver from chasing after her so she could escape.
See, I think she was shooting McKenna. I don't think she was trying to shoot Oliver.
Oh, okay. You think, okay.
I mean, that's what but the other thing that brings up is, you know, she didn't kill any of those people. She threatened to, but do you think she would have done it? I mean, do you think she would have killed the people that Oliver was close to? Or do you think that she had enough, I hesitate to say moral judgment when it comes to her, but do you think she had enough of that to just restrain herself because she didn't want to, I don't know, damage the relationship with Oliver so much.
So much more.
Hey, look, I threatened your family. I broke your friend's wrist. I shot your girlfriend, but I didn't kill him.
You want to go to the movies? You know, so, that's a really interesting question, Josh, because if we look at this morally deprived character that is Helena Bertinelli, who will go to no end to see that justice is brought to basically herself. I mean, it's a very selfish act that she's doing, because she's trying to kill her dad and take down his entire the mob business that he's running, which is weird because it kind of seems like it was already imploding. So I'm not sure, you know, she killed his attorney or whoever at the beginning of the episode. But if we assume that she has this restraint against killing, where, you know, Oliver always seems to kind of skirt this line, as we were talking about, Oliver actually fires an arrow at her and would have killed her if not for supposed training that she undertook and was able to, you know, actually catch the arrow.
See, I like that. That seemed like a very Huntress move to me, where she caught it.
Well, yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, totally superhero. I was a little thrown off on it because he just seemed so close to her. It's like there's I've watched Mythbusters. I see him trying to catch arrows. So you got to be pretty far away to have the reaction time, but. We're talking superheroes
anyway. Yeah, right. Anyway, she could have done real, but and I'm not sure entirely where she got that training. I guess they got some quick courses in Europe. Didn't she say she was in Europe for that time that she was away? So.
Yeah, she was vacationing abroad in a couple different places. But so here's this person that we think has all these horrible qualities about her, yet she has the chance to kill these individuals after they provide the information that she needs. And in the case of McKenna, you know, it's just going to be a distraction basically so she can get away. And she doesn't take the killing shot, yet Oliver has made the decision that he's going to just take her down because he feels that anybody else that she kills will be, you know, the blood will be on his hands because of the training that he provided her.
Do you think that was it? You think it was because of the it was a guilt thing? Is that why you think he was trying to stop her, or you think he was just trying to prevent her from killing more people as his hero duty, I guess?
Oh, I think he was totally feeling the guilt from it. He provided her that initial training. I mean, heck, he provided her not the final crossbow that she used, because that was taken by the police, and what she broke into, like a she stole another one from somewhere. I can't remember.
She went they said a high-powered crossbow.
Oh, right, from like the sporting goods store or whatever.
So. Yeah, she stopped by Crossbows R Us or something and picked up a new.
But, so. I mean, he gave her the initial crossbow. I mean, he gave her the costume mm-hmm. that she uses. I mean, it's like, I go back to that whole Anakin Skywalker thing. You know, it's like he trained her and then she fell and, you know, his training was not complete. So that, you know, she was unprepared for whatever was to come next, and she started making wrong choices and using that training in a way that it was not intended to be used. And I think he feels, you know, guilty and responsible for that.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think he does feel some responsibility for that too. I wondered if that's why, or is it more of a protection of his secret or his loved ones, or just the killing? Maybe it's all those things. I mean, he's struggling with a lot of these issues. And you know, I got to thinking about this this whole not a contradiction, but this whole exploration of this idea of him being a killer. And a hero, or a hero, and or a hero, mm-hmm. anti-hero, whatever you want to call it. But and it's I can't remember, and I could be wrong, but I'm not sure of the last time that he actually killed somebody. But I don't think that he's actually just outright murdered anybody since maybe the first couple episodes of the series.
Well, okay, so when you say outright murdered, you mean someone who was not able to protect themselves in some fashion?
Well, I mean, like in a in a defensive way, either self-defense or they were about to kill somebody or
yeah. I mean, he
you know, whatever they were doing.
He took out that knife-wielding dude at the heliport at the beginning of, I think it was the previous episode.
Yeah, yeah. But that was like a self-defense kind of thing. He didn't just shoot the guy, you know. I mean, like at the beginning, he was finding people on a list and just like, hey, you failed the city. Here's a free arrow. But I'm wondering if that was all kind of part of the plan originally, or if the writers have said, look, you know, this guy's maybe not as much of a hero as we want him to be. Let's hold back on the killing. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I've been thinking about that a lot in the last few episodes, because this seems to kind of be a running theme with him becoming the hero. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this too, but on the island, I think he is still yet to kill anybody. Is that right?
Yeah, because he had the opportunity to shoot the guy when they were escaping from the camp after Slade killed Deathstroke or Billy Wintergreen, and there was a guy. The guy went down. Oliver stole the gun from the guy, and Oliver was going to shoot him, and then he just turned the gun around and smacked him on the face and knocked him out.
Right. So I think I don't think they have shown him kill anybody on the island. So I don't know. I've been kind of speculating and wondering where that's going to go, and so.
Yeah, well, speaking of the island, that was also another example of leverage in use. Not a lot of island story. Basically, the whole island story deals with the Scylla, I guess. It was the missile. It's the Russian missile launcher that they found there, which can shoot missiles up to 2,400 kilometers, I believe they said. So somewhere from the North China Sea, they're going to attack something, and nobody's sure what. So Slade and Oliver are wondering, you know, what they need to do. So they head down to the missile launcher, and they pull the old Wookiee prisoner trick. So Oliver pretends to be one of the mercenaries, so that he's captured Slade. So all of the guards kind of head into the same area, and Slade pulls the two guns from behind his back and shoots everybody down. And they're trying to figure out how to blow it up. They find some explosives, but meanwhile, Oliver goes, oh, wait a second, there's a circuit board here, and if we take this, it'll be useless, and we can use it, you know, to get something from fires. So they end up stealing the circuit board and using that as leverage to get fires on the radio and say, hey, you know, we want a way off the island, and we'll give you the circuit board in exchange. And so it looks like they're setting up a trade-off, like we said at the beginning of the show, to be able to get off the island. So, you know, that's great. Oliver's going to get off the island after only a few months here. No,
so,
they said he was
so
on
where
the
has he been then?
Oh, no.
He has 4.5 years. Maybe he comes back. You know, it's like one of those things in Gilligan's Island where they get off.
He sails
but
back.
He just wants to go check it out and then get stuck again. I don't know.
Well, that'd be cool, because I have not seen the Harlem Globetrotters for a long, long time. So I'd love to see them again. So
he's going to save the Yao Fei and his daughter, and then he's going to have to save the Harlem Globetrotters from fires next. See,
I think we have to wait till like the 12th season of the show for something like that. So
yeah, that's usually when it falls apart. That's also when he'll get a really cute little brother or something, you know, to keep the show going.
Other than that, there wasn't really much in the island storyline to, you know, it's like, oh, well, he's going to get off the island or is he, you know, I don't think there was any new revelations there that really told us anything.
No, I'm glad they at least put a good Slade Wilson butt kicking in there, you know, to kind of keep it interesting for the island part of this episode, you know, so because he took those guys out real quick all by himself. So I sometimes think Oliver's just holding him back. I'm still wondering why he's dragging Oliver along with him, but he hasn't seemed to be a whole lot of help yet. But I think there's more to that.
I don't know. There was that kind of lame reason earlier that they needed two people to take the tower, the flight tower. But I don't know. Maybe Slade thinks he owes Oliver something now for putting up with him.
Yeah.
So
we'll see. Well, he, I guess he technically saved his life. You know, he got him the magic herbs. Yeah. And yeah. So, right. dug the bullet out of his arm, and so.
Yeah. So the other thing that we see in this episode is at the end of the previous episode, Laurel's mom, Dinah, came back and said, "I think your sister may still be alive," and fade to black. So this episode explores that a little bit further, and we get to hear a little bit of explanation as to why Dinah thinks that Sarah may still be alive. And basically, Laurel tricks her dad, who we still don't know the reason. There's nothing that I remember from this episode that explained why they're not together anymore, other than, you know, potentially just the upset of having a daughter lost or killed. Maybe that just kind of drove the family apart.
Yeah. It was obviously very, very emotional time. I mean, as it would be, of course, but I mean, like, you can tell that it strained the relationships of the family a lot. So,
well, and since Laurel had to basically trick her dad into coming to breakfast with her, so that
they went to Big Belly Burger
for breakfast, right,
where all good business dealings in Starling City take place.
It's totally true. That's you know, that's everybody sits down and has a burger, or, you know, whatever, pancakes or flapjacks, and works everything out there. So Dinah comes back and you know, is explaining kind of what seems like a relatively crazy theory. There's a photo she found of someone that looks very, very much like Sarah that was taken on an island somewhere in the North China Sea, very much near where Oliver was found. And Dinah's been doing all sorts of research on this. And Quentin just, he can't stand this. It's just, I mean, it's all crazy talk. He's obviously spent 5 years getting over the pain and moving on with his life and not trying to, I think he even says at one point, not thinking every day about, you know, Sarah, like when he wakes up in the morning. And it goes from that at the beginning, and then there are a couple other conversations that Quentin has with Laurel throughout the episode about this, and Laurel's like, well, you know, maybe you can just convince Mom that, you know, she just needs to stop, you know, looking, and that it's a mistake or whatever. And so the episode ends with Quentin inviting Dinah back to the police station, saying, you know what, I'm ready to listen. So my question to you is, since this episode's about leverage, is there something else going on with Dinah here? Is she trying to use this in some way to create some leverage with either Laurel or with Quentin to, I don't know, get back into the family or something? Or am I trying to read too much into that?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Did she say why? Did Dinah say why she came back to ask for their help? Did she explain herself?
So.
I mean,
no, because she had been trying to call Laurel. I think she had finally just kind of made this connection, or this photo was the newest piece. Like she had some idea that she might still be alive, and then I think this photo turned up on some website that she was investigating.
So maybe she just felt like she finally had enough that she could go to them and tell them. Maybe.
Yeah. I think that might have been it. So I don't know. I mean, there just didn't seem to be a lot for that. But I know that thematically, the creators in the show try to, you know, string a bunch of stuff together on the different storylines and everything like
that.
So.
Yeah. And usually pretty successfully too. So maybe so. I mean, I didn't see that here, but you know, there's two things that make me think that might be a good little theory. One is the just a flimsy story that she gave. There's lots of islands there, and look, I have a picture, which I don't know. I mean, it's just, there wasn't that much to go on that would make you believe that maybe she was still alive. So maybe there's more to it, like you said. And the other reason that I think, you know, there might be more to it is, again, if you connect it to the comics canon, you know, the comic world version of Green Arrow, you know, Dinah Lance is Black Canary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, maybe there's more to her character. I don't see any kind of a superhero type thing evolving with her, but maybe there's more to it with her connected to something more with her daughter and the accident, or I guess not the accident, sabotage. But so those are the two reasons that I can see maybe there would be more to that. So I hadn't even made that connection though.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, it, and you know, maybe someone's using her, you know, by planning this information, and maybe there's something else going on. But yeah, you know, it did seem kind of like a flimsy excuse. There are all these islands there. Oliver's able to survive, you know, maybe Sarah was able to survive too. But yeah, we kind of talked about this last time. It's just like, I just don't know. You know, it seemed like at the end of the previous episode, she had good reason to say that. I mean, just in the way that they, you know, had her say the line, I guess.
The dramatic entrance.
Right. So now it's like, oh, okay. You know, I think you're just kind of a crazy lady now.
Yeah, she did. She did seem a little obsessed, didn't she? So,
but it was, I thought it was relatively sweet because, you know, Quentin invited her back, and I think he kind of put his hand on her hand as well, there at the end. So, you know, that's, that was quite a turnaround for him in his character as well. But, yeah, this episode did move through things quite quickly. We covered a lot of ground in this particular episode. I feel that the information with Helena, or all the sequences with Helena and stuff like that, that was obviously the main thrust of the episode. And they wanted to move the other storylines along just a little bit. So, you know, they only had one or two scenes with all the other pieces. So maybe that's why it kind of felt rushed. They were just trying to cram too many storylines into here instead of giving some time for the characters to breathe a little bit. And we, you know, we're getting to the point where we've got, I don't know, close to like a dozen characters now that we're following, probably six different storylines. We've got, you know, Oliver and Laurel and Oliver and Tommy and Oliver and Dig and Felicity and Quentin.
Minus
McKenna. Right. So
maybe that's why they got rid of her.
That's truly possible as well. I don't know. So there's, you know, stuff like that, you know, just goes on and on for the storylines, but we don't want to, you know, we don't have to spend the time on them each week. Personally, I won't feel gypped if they don't continue on, you know, the Tommy storyline, but I really want to see them progress the character, and his reactions in an honest way. And if they try to put something in with Tommy dealing with Oliver's issues each week, they might feel just too rushed because they feel like, okay, well, we have to start with Tommy being this way, but by the end of the episode, he needs to be accepting of this or whatever. So, you know, we'll do something, and it just ends up rushing along. So,
yeah, I don't like when those stories feel rushed, but you do have to at least throw them in a little cameo for the episode or something, because especially like people like Tommy, who right now doesn't seem all that important, but you know, again, we suspect that he's going to be very important. So we'll see.
Right. So we'll follow up on that as that happens. As far as references for this episode, there weren't a lot, but there was some cool stuff going on here. So first off, McKenna mentions at the end that she has some family that lives in Coast City, which is I think has been mentioned a couple times before, the Coast City name, and it's the home to Hal Jordan, who's the Green Lantern. So. Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of my coworkers, and I said, you know what would be really cool is if we had even characters that would normally be super-powered superheroes in the DC comics. For example, like Hal Jordan, you know, with his Green Lantern ring, or the Flash, Barry Allen. Wouldn't it be cool if there were just characters that were brought onto the show, and, you know, some guy introduces himself to Oliver at one point. It's like, hi, I'm Hal Jordan. And Oliver's, oh, Oliver Queen. And the fans would just go nuts. It's like, that's the guy, he's Green Lantern. But he never would be Green Lantern on the show. And they would need to set it up in a way to not expect us to have him be Green Lantern, and maybe, you know, just put it on as like a, you know, just a couple-minute cameo kind of thing. But wouldn't that be cool? You know, Oliver's talking to some crime lab somewhere about something, or Felicity's talking to a guy in a crime lab, and he identifies himself as Barry Allen. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I'd have to think about that a little bit. I'd have to think if I would like that or not. You risk getting a little, Well, two things. You risk getting a little Smallville-y, right? Where you start changing them. Which doesn't bother me. I know that some people didn't care for the way that they would take a character and fit him into the Smallville universe. But they had the flexibility there where they could give you superpowers. But then you kind of risk going, well, look, they just brought in this superhero character, but they didn't give him any powers. So how does that work? So you've really changed the character again, you know, in this case. So, but I don't know. I might not mind that. I guess if they did it right, I might be okay with it. I'm gonna have to contemplate that a little bit.
All right. Well, so think about that. While you're thinking about that, there was also a scene where Roy got cut with a blade and has to go into the doctor's, and Thea's with him. And
he saved Thea. That's how he got cut.
He did some great parkour up the wall. That was really pretty incredible.
Parkour alert.
Yep. Another parkour. I think we should be keeping a parkour table here, or a chart, so we can track this. Anyway, the doctor has to give him a shot for some reason. I have no idea for what. Maybe tetanus. But
that might have been something like that, because he got stabbed. So
yeah, exactly. Roy is afraid of needles, which you pointed out here is very funny, because he's a heroin addict in the comics and shooting up. So to have him be needle averse, I think, is a little interesting nod, you know, shout out there.
Yeah, it was an interesting contradiction between the two Roy Harpers.
Mm-hmm. And then this is the first episode that we see Oliver's nightclub in action. It's finally been built. And look, we've gone the entire episode and we haven't even mentioned Steve Aoki and his 5-minute cameo, who I'm still really not sure who this dude is, other than he's kind of, I guess, a famous DJ. But the name of the club is Verdant, which is a shout out to the Verdant means green. So I think that's a cool little nod to, you know, Green Arrow and all that. I think Quentin Lance was the one that gave Huntress her name shout out.
Yep.
She's locked up.
When they were interrogating her, he called her a hunter.
Yes.
And then he corrected himself, and I guess that would be Huntress.
Yes. I thought that was well done. And she just had this kind of smarmy smile on her face the whole time. She's like, you know, she's chained to this table, and it's like, it looked like she was going to be like, well, it's fine, I can get out of here whenever I want, you know, kind of thing. Like, she knew that Ollie was going to come get her, I guess.
You know, maybe he was so proud of himself for giving her that name that that's why he didn't believe her about Oliver being the vigilante. Oh. He was so distracted by his brilliance.
Possibly. And then, wow, this went by really quick. Diggle was looking at an online newspaper story about the Bialian president who was assassinated by Deadshot. And there was like some little surveillance photo on the front page of the newspaper showing Deadshot. So he's still out there doing stuff. But Bialia is a Middle Eastern country in the DC universe that got a lot of airplay usage in Adventures of Superman, and I think in Teen Titans as well. It is the home to the supervillainess Queen Bee. And now watch this. So the director of this episode was Guy Bee. And so he puts a reference in for the Bialian president from where Queen Bee is from. So maybe he's the King Bee.
Huh.
See, I've just kind of wrapped that all together there.
And this week's episode of Arrow was brought to you by the letter B.
All right. Well, I think that's a great place to end it right there on the letter B. So hopefully you've all enjoyed this week's episode of Green Justice.
And if you have, make sure you leave us some feedback on iTunes. We'd love to see that. Please, also, you can contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. And you can also go to our Facebook page. Make sure you're sharing our Facebook page, commenting on our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And, of course, if you're enjoying this, please be sure to tell your friends about our show and our pages and share it with them. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.